You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to the Dressage Today podcast, sponsored by Farnam's Endure Gold and Tribute Equine Nutrition. As always, if you like what we're doing, please hit the like button, subscribe to our show, and share it with your friends. Today, Aviva and I get the pleasure of interviewing Chelsea Kennedy, the author of Finding Purpose, a story about her life with horses and the journey they have taken her on. Good morning, Aviva.
Good morning. I'm so excited to talk to Chelsea. The other Stephanie and I interviewed her back in 2021, and she is a shining light and a delight in the horse world. And I can't wait to catch up with her because she's just really quite lovely. Our listeners might want to go back and listen to that interview before listening to our interview today, just to get a sense of how far Chelsea has come, even in the last 5 years. It's a remarkable story, and she's really somebody that I think can resonate with all of us.
That's a great way to put it, because when I read the book, I felt this sense of, I don't want to say awe or comfort, but I felt this sense of like, ah,
yeah.
Like, okay, there are other like-minded horse people out there in little nooks and crannies all over this country.
Yeah.
That's what I left the book with, was that feeling.
Yeah.
And I think that's an amazing thing to have. So
I just like how genuine she is
cool.
and how willing she is to open her mind to different things and to experiment and to be honest when things don't work and to embrace things when they do work. So It'll be fun for our listeners, I think. So looking forward to that. But before we get to that, what's new with you, Steph?
Well, you know me. I'm moving at the speed of sound all the time, and I've just kind of gotten to the place where I am calm about it, which, you know, that's a life accomplishment in itself.
Mm-hmm.
I have Mark Langley coming back in, picking him up from Australia.
Yay.
That was a terrible Australian accent.
Yes, it was.
picking him up tonight. So I'm looking forward to that. I showed at WEC this past weekend. That was very exciting. I decided I wanted to go up because there were three shows going on. There was the national show that I was in. There was the three-star CDI. And there was also the Grand Prix National Championship, which essentially was an opportunity for our top riders to get together and compete against each other. They are trying to secure a berth for the European tour. So I just thought, you know, what a great opportunity to get to go and watch really top riders ride.
Yes.
And there I might as well show. And it was all air conditioned. So,
which is so nice.
Yeah. Dante acted like this was his milieu.
Good for him.
You know, he was walking around the barns on the buckle, you know, because you have to walk the green mile. You walk down the air-conditioned barn aisle to get to the air-conditioned arena.
Wow.
And he, all I could think is, great, I have a super bougie horse who thinks that this is where he should show all the time. And how am I going to afford this?
How are you going to explain to him that we're not doing this every time? Yeah.
I was like, remember, you still got to go back to the cattle ranch, dude.
Yeah.
Although you will laugh because, you know, when I took him out to hand graze him, I found there was a retention ditch that was dry because it's so dry here in Florida.
Yeah,
and
here too.
They had not mowed it, and the grass was amazing. So I took him down in the ditch, and we were eating grass down there, and he was eating grass. I was just watching. But when I when I started to walk back to the barns, one of somebody that I know was grazing their horse up near the paddocks in like the approved area, and I yelled over to them, hey, you should go down in the ditch. The grass is really good there. And she and her husband looked over and she goes, of course it was you in the ditch. Of course you were grazing your horse in the ditch. And I was like, the grass is really good. And she goes, your Okeechobee's showing. So I said I would try to tuck that in. So that was pretty funny.
So I have a question for you. Given all of the biosecurity issues, you still felt confident hand grazing your horse? Given EHV1 and strangles and everything else that's out there?
So we had to, in order to show there, you have to actually have a health certificate.
Okay.
So you don't just show your vaccines and your Coggins, but you have to get a health certificate.
Okay. Okay.
There also weren't a lot of horses out hand grazing. I will put that out there.
Okay. Okay. Just curious.
So yeah. 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 So we did the pre-St. George both days. Score wise, we were okay. Placing wise, we were really low. And I don't care because I thought he was really awesome. And we got quite a lot of sevens on our test. And then we had some big oopses. Our left pirouette in the canter was not our favorite pirouette this weekend at all.
If I recall correctly, was it just last year that you went to WEC? Was it WEC? And you couldn't compete. He was so worked up about everything. So the fact that you got in and did pre-St. George and got decent scores, who cares what the placing was? He was a good boy. He survived and he thrived.
Yes. That was actually, that was global. And yeah, it was 2 years ago.
Yeah,
but
global.
Yes, he was amazing. Yeah, he was amazing in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
But like, you would be proud of me from a judge's standpoint because he changed leads coming out of my left pirouette and I had the mental wherewithal to stop and I picked up the left lead again and made the corner so that I did the change. It's the flying change at C. So even though I got a 4 for my pirouette, I still got a 7 on my flying change.
For the change. Good for you.
So that was good. So it was a good weekend. I was proud of my pony. Yeah. And I am one of the, I'm using air quotes, I'm one of the experts for Team Prac, which is a Dressage Today Plus and Practical Horseman Plus group of horse people that members can ask us questions and, you know, pull from our vast array of knowledges. And they've asked me to do a webinar on Rider Biomechanics 101.
Wonderful.
So we're going to do a live webinar. I'm going to, you know, do a little talk about what Rider Biomechanics is and maybe what it isn't. And then we're going to, people can submit questions and we're going to answer questions live. And
how do you register for this?
You can go to either Dressage Today Plus or Practical Horseman Plus and become a member, and then you can submit questions.
Okay. And from what I understand, membership used to be pretty expensive for Dressage Today Plus, and it's now only $40 a year, and it gives you access to an enormous library of videos and educational opportunities and this webinar. So people should take a look at it.
Yes, without a doubt. They've definitely made it more affordable and they have not minimized the educational opportunities on there. So, yeah. So if you want to get a chance to ask me questions in person, make sure you sign up before June 2nd. It's 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time or Eastern Standard Time, whatever time we're on. And it should be a lot of fun. And there will probably be a cow. There may be a cow.
Something I would imagine there would be.
So,
well, congratulations. And that's very exciting for you.
Yeah. I think it's going to be cool. I think it's going to be cool. So I did ask them what happens if nobody asks questions. And they said that never happens. I'm like, okay, I'm going to trust you guys.
Have you ever done a live webinar before? Okay. I did one once many, 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 many years ago, and it was fun. It was fun. You're going to have fun and people are going to ask questions. Not to worry.
Okay. Okay. Well, maybe you should be on there. Like, maybe you should be what do they call it? A plant. You should be a plant.
A plant. I'm a plant.
You can be like, hi, I'm Charlene. I'm Charlene and I'm from Kansas and I want to know this.
Yep. There we go.
This episode is brought to you by Farnam, celebrating 80 years of trusted equine care, and Endure Gold Killer Fly and Mosquito Control, a new fly spray for horses. When your horse needs to stay focused, it helps to take flies out of the equation. Endure Gold uses brand new EPA-approved ingredients never before seen in equine care to annihilate flies, ticks, and mosquitoes. This advanced formula delivers fast knockdown and up to 14 days of fly protection you can trust. Discover fly protection with Endure Gold from Farnam.
I have an Ask the L question for you.
All righty.
It's from Mary. Mary says, I'm hoping to start showing second level this year. My question is, how much collection is the judge looking for in second level? I've scribed at several shows, and it doesn't appear that many horses have that much collection, but yet they seem to score well on movements, 6 or 6.5. I know you don't have to come in like a Grand Prix horse in second level, but I'm curious. I think that's a great question.
Okay. That is a good question. So the first thing that I'm going to say, Mary, is, second level is the first time that you are asked to show collection. When you are asked to show something new, I think that the judges understand that the balance and the presentation will not always be 100%. So you're saying that you're not seeing horses in a great deal of collection, maybe that. But then the next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to send you to the purpose that's at the top of the test for second level. And I want to read that really quickly. To confirm that the horse demonstrates correct basics and now begins to accept more weight on the hindquarters as the collected and medium gaits develop. A greater degree of straightness, suppleness, thoroughness, and balance are required to perform the movements with ease and self-carriage. All trot work must be done sitting. So my answer, Mary, is to me, what that says is that your horse or a horse at second level is able to carry themselves and is able to demonstrate true medium as opposed to a lengthened gait. So There's a wonderful diagram of what the gaits look like, and it's, you know, kind of loop, 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 and, you know, working trot is a flat loop, and, you know, collection is a smaller, you know, a narrower but higher loop, and medium is an even higher loop, but it covers more ground. So a lengthening at first level, if you read the instructions, it is an increased length of stride. It doesn't really say anything about shifting the weight back onto the hindquarters. A medium should show that the horse's shoulders lift, that the hindquarters come under, and that the horse starts to show some cadence. So the answer to the question is you need enough collection to be able to demonstrate that. You know, I don't expect to see something that is breathtaking like a Grand Prix horse doing a medium or extension, but I want to see that the horse changes the way that they carry themselves. if your horse is not truly in collection to some degree, and it doesn't need to be a lot, you are unable to perform the movements of the test in a pretty manner. So one of the second level tests has a 10 meter canter circle right smack in front of the judge at C. And 95% of the horses that I see lean on the inside shoulder. I call it drilling for oil. And they cruise around that circle on the inside shoulder. 5% of riders ride that 10 meter circle with uphill balance, almost like a very large pirouette, that the weight is behind and that the shoulders jump. So you may be able to make a 10 meter canter circle and show bend and keep the gait. And, you know, is that acceptable? Well, yeah, you know, yeah, that's probably a six, because you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, just not, you know, it's sufficient. Some judges might give that a 5.5. But if you start to show that jump, if you start to show that balance coming from the hindquarters rather than drilling for oil on the front shoulder, that score is going to be higher. It's going to be the 6.5 or the 7 or the 7.5. You know, if you show a medium and all your horse does is go faster, and even if they cover more ground, but they go faster, that's, you're kind of doing what you're supposed to be doing. But in order to show a true medium, the balance needs to change. So at second one, I want to see something less than what I want to see at second three, because you're moving up the levels and you should be showing that your horse is becoming stronger. And as you get to second three, you want to start thinking about, ooh, now maybe I'm going to third level. And that's even more collection. So the problem with dressage is that it's a very subjective sport. There is no way for me to put a scale underneath your horse and say, oh, wow, look, he's carrying more weight behind. He is in self-carriage now, and he is in collection. So the judge has to do the best she can to try to get a feel for the way that your horse is carrying himself, to start to see whether or not there is a change in the gaits, to see whether or not there is some cadence being shown, to see that the horse seems to want to be climbing rather than digging. And I don't know how else to put it. And you know, and again, at second one, I don't expect to see the horse perfect. Just like, you know, now at first level, we are expecting a horse to be, quote, on the bit. But we don't expect the horse to be on the bit 100% of the time at first one. Or maybe even at first two.
Right.
Or maybe even at first three. So at second level, I want to see a horse who's starting to show me some collection, but maybe not 100% of the time, because it's the first time that you show it. And as you move up the levels, you show more and the expectations are greater. But the first time a test asks for something new, we are more understanding of development than once it is expected. You know, if you were riding a 20 meter circle as a second level horse, we expect a very different kind of balance and suppleness and bend, than we would of a training level horse, because a training level horse is just starting to understand those things. And that's why at training level, we ride a 20 meter circle. And at second level, we ride a 10 meter circle, because the expectation changes. At second level, we start to ask for more complex lateral work. We start to ask for things like the shoulder in and the haunches in. Those are things that help your horse with collection. Because if your horse isn't truly sitting behind, you're not really riding a shoulder in. How many of you have ridden second level and your comment from the judge is too much angle on one side, neck bend on the other? And that's because you're pulling your horse around. you're not truly asking your horse to shift the weight behind and to sit and then lift the shoulders out of the way. So,
has your horse been diagnosed with a neurological or muscular disorder? Is he showing signs of muscle wasting and impaired balance or coordination? Studies show that supplemented water-soluble natural vitamin E can reach a horse's brain and spinal cord through the blood-brain barrier, where it can benefit horses with neurological issues. If your horse has any of these problems, Elevate WS and natural vitamin liquid can help. A research-proven, powerful antioxidant, Elevate maintains healthy muscle, nerve, and immune function. It does this by delivering a highly bioavailable source of natural vitamin E that is preferentially absorbed and retained in a horse's tissues. For more information, visit kppusa.com or call 859-873-2974. That's kppusa.com or 859-873-2974. What if your horse's nutrition only changed when it truly mattered? That's the philosophy behind Tribute Equine Nutrition. As a fixed formula brand, they don't make changes unless new research shows they can make their feeds meaningfully better. Supporting things like digestibility, nutrient absorption, and overall performance. That's why Tribute Equine Nutrition is upgrading every formula in their lineup, building on improvements made to their best sellers, and rolling out those advancements across 2026. To celebrate, Tribute has hidden golden tickets in random bags worth up to a year's supply of feed for one horse. Horse owners can also get a free personalized feeding plan, and new customers receive their first bag shipped free. Visit TributeEquineNutrition.com and click Get a Feed Plan to learn more.
So the level of collection that is expected is the level of collection that allows you to perform the movements beautifully. The shoulder in, the haunches in should improve the quality of your horse's gait, should start to develop that feeling of cadence, because if your horse isn't collected in the shoulder in and the haunches in, they're not going to be able to perform the movements correctly.
Right. Right.
So that's a really roundabout way of answering, that question. But again, it's a subjective kind of thing. It's sort of like, you know, how do you recognize pornography? I know it when I see it.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, how do I recognize collection? I know it when I see it. I can describe it to you. But one of the problems with, of course, a podcast is that I can't show it to you. You know, you could send me 3 videotapes and I could talk about each one of those horses' level of collection and what's missing and what's there. But just talking about it makes it a little bit more difficult. And that's what makes judging so very difficult, because what I might see as really wonderful, you may just see as that's nice. Yeah. And we score the same way. And that was a little bit like you going to WEC this weekend. I mean, you were, fortunately for you, Adrian Lyle did scratch, but you know, she was going to ride right in front of you.
In front of me.
and, you know, I don't expect you and Dante to be at the level that Adrian Lyle is.
Right.
And we like to believe that every time the horse does their final salute, the judge wipes the slate clean and the next horse comes in completely clean because we have an understanding of our expectation for whatever test is being ridden in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have somebody who is an 8 mover performing all of the movements at a 7 or an 8 level, mm-hmm. and then you have somebody come in with a 7 mover performing the movements at a 6 to 7 level, it's hard to always maintain that objectivity and not compare.
Yes.
You know, we like to try with
who they are.
Yeah.
It's the level that they, when you're riding, you know, FEI horses all day long.
Yeah.
Every day, then you ride, you bring your second or third level, you know, your baby horse out in that case.
Yeah.
And you ride a second or third level test, you're going to ride that test super well because you ride, FEI horses all day.
Yep.
So, and it's not unfair. It's still judging everybody where they are.
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, it is, you know, nobody wants to come in right behind an Olympian.
No, you know, one of the things that I have seen over my years of judging is that I can go somewhere where I don't know anybody. You know, I get invited to judge someplace that I've never been before and I don't know the people and I don't know the riders. I can tell who the professionals are versus the amateurs.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying anything against amateurs, but professionals bring something different to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a different understanding and a different level of riding generally than from amateurs.
Mm-hmm.
And my goal as an instructor is to make my riders ride like pros.
Sure.
Even when they're not, because that does show. So it, you know, judging is hard. It's a very subjective activity. And, you know, you have to be strong and secure and trusting in your eye and your understanding, especially now we've talked about this before with social media. I just judged a virtual show. And it was a private show for a specific breed organization.
Mm.
And I was told by one of my students who has that breed horse that the organization encourages their riders to post their videos and their tests, as an educational opportunity for their other riders. And what that means is that my test sheet is very public. My scores and my comments are very public. And
mm-hmm.
everyone can see that I marked that medium trot as a 5.5 and said lacks uphill balance and cadence versus the one that I say is a 7 and say shows some lift and cadence.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you know, people can either agree with me or disagree with me. I mean, how many of us have said over the years, this judge doesn't like the way I ride or doesn't like my horse, or I feel like my scores are always low. And you make a choice not to ride for that particular judge. And that, I think that's fair. And it's not saying anything negative about the judge.
Right. You know, it's your two thought processes on a test do not mesh.
Yeah.
Why keep hitting your head up against a wall?
Well, you know, think about it. The international judges, there are 5 to 7 judges in a panel.
Mm-hmm.
And the scores are not identical.
I have to tell you, I was impressed with how close, like they were within 4 points. 4 percentage points.
Yep. But think
the ones that I saw this weekend.
That's great. But think about it. 4 percentage points is the difference between a 59 and a 63.
Yeah. Yeah.
So 4 percentage points is tight. Yes.
Yeah, it is.
And where you sit in the arena does affect the way you see a movement. Yes.
Sure.
But the difference, you know, if you come home with a 59, you're not a happy camper.
No.
If you come home with a 63, you feel pretty satisfied.
Yeah.
If you get a 63, you're pretty satisfied. If you come home with a 67, you rock.
Whoop, whoop.
You know what I mean? So I think people need to keep that also in perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, it is incredible to me. It was interesting. I judged a virtual show for Israel, and I had two people who were testing to move up, and that required two judges to evaluate the videos.
Okay.
And so I was one judge, and there was another judge who was Israeli, who I met when I was in Israel. And it was really interesting because we swapped. I placed one person above the other. He placed the other above my first place.
Okay.
However, my scores were 60 and 62, and his scores were 61 and 63.
Mm.
So we were within 3 percentage points.
Yeah.
But we saw something different.
Right.
We also judged another test for somebody moving up, and he and I scored the exact same score down to the third decimal point.
Wow.
Yes. But every single box was not the same.
So there was, you know, something that maybe you liked it a little bit better than he did.
Exactly.
And then another movement, he liked it a little bit better than you did.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, the thing about dressage riders is that we pay people to judge us.
Mm-hmm.
Really mm-hmm. hard. It's really hard on the ego.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people talk about breed bias, and people talk about, you know, weight bias, and people talk about all kinds of things. And at the end of the day, there is a certain element of truth to all of that, because what I see as beautiful may not be what you see as beautiful.
Right.
And we try to be as objective as we can, but honestly, this sport is about beauty. And
yeah,
you know, your eye for beauty is different than my eye for beauty. And judges do the best that they can. But we got kind of off topic. But anyway, so Mary, in answer to your question, the level of collection and second level, you know, not so much.
Not so much.
Not so much. You know, you want to see something. You want to see that the person is making the effort and the horse is making the effort. But we don't expect it to be carried necessarily throughout the entire test. And we don't expect something that, you know, the horse can suddenly go down the long side and do a series of three tempi changes because the horse isn't ready yet.
Right.
So that was a long-winded answer with lots of, you know, detours to that question. But thank you, Mary.
Well, and thinking about what you said about beauty, that it makes me think about two separate moments at this show. I watched Anna Merrick ride in the 3-star.
Mm-hmm.
And we were, I think she was the last rider, whatever class it was that we were watching. And we ran into her as she was going back to the warm up ring. And we all said, you know, lovely ride. That was so nice. And she said, oh, thank you. And I said, I kind of whispered to her, I said, and you know what else? She goes, what? I said, your horse looks happy, because they were coming out of the ring. His eye was soft.
Yeah.
His ears were, you know, perked, but not like, rah-rah.
Yeah.
And he was on the buckle. And she put her hand over her heart and she goes, that means more than anything else.
Yeah.
Thank you. And that was the thing that I had several people tell me, that watching Dante and I, that we look so harmonious.
Yeah.
And so whether we're making a mistake or not, I love the fact that it looks like we're making the mistake together.
Yeah. Well, you know what that, I say to my students is that nobody has scored 100% yet. And 100% means excellent, not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we are not machines and our horses are not machines. And I use the example of Debbie McDonald and Brentina in Japan. You know, they were the anchor for our team. Mm-hmm. They were going to bring home our bronze. And Brentina got into mm-hmm. that arena and looked at the Robotron and said, no. And you know what? She's a horse. That's okay. These right. things happen. You know,
yeah.
You don't get upset with the horse. You don't get upset with the rider. These things happen. When Simone mm-hmm. Biles decided that she had the twisties and couldn't perform and people, you know, badmouthed her. No, we're human. Yeah. We are not machines. Yeah. And, you know, if you watch the Olympians, there are bobbles. There are moments sure. where the carriage shifts. There's a change yeah. where they're short behind. They may be unlevel for a moment in Piaf or Passage. You know,
we can all be Olympians when we are riding at home, but yeah. you add that pressure and yeah. who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah. And we are all human and our horses are sentient beings mm-hmm. who may not have slept well in the stall overnight,
mm-hmm.
who maybe heard that backfire in the parking lot that you didn't. Because mm-hmm. you were so focused, but they're prey animals. They heard it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we don't expect perfection from anybody.
There we go. On that note, we are going to have a word from one of our sponsors, and then we are going to go on to our interview.
And now a word from our sponsor. You know that feeling when everything comes together? The rhythm, the balance, the connection. At Tribute Equine Nutrition, that same pursuit of excellence drives us to keep improving. We're upgrading our entire line with advanced formulations to better support your horse's health, performance, and longevity. To celebrate, we're hiding golden tickets in select bags, each one worth 40 free bags of feed, about a year's supply for one horse. Ready to elevate your program? Visit TributeEquineNutrition.com for a free personalized feeding plan. If you're new to Tribute, your first bag is on us, and everything we make is backed by a 100% money-back guarantee. Again, visit TributeEquineNutrition.com. And be sure to mention Dressage Today sent you.
Today, we are excited to have Chelsea Kennedy joining us in the studio. Chelsea, welcome.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be back. It's been a minute, and I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah, it's been, was it 2024 that the other staff and Aviva interviewed you?
I feel like it was even earlier than that.
I think it was 2023. I actually pulled it so that I could talk about it because I want our listeners to go back and listen to your original interview with us. And now I can't find it anywhere, but I'll re-find it. Actually, while we're talking, I'm going to look. Yeah, while we're talking, I'm going to look.
On my webpage, so.
Oh, there you go. Awesome. Awesome. Well, and I know you've had a busy morning already getting children and other humans organized. So thank mm-hmm. you for fitting us into your schedule.
Of course.
I don't know. Well, you probably don't know this because it's not a big part of my life or, you know, what I put out there, but I am also from Maine.
Oh my gosh. I did not know that. Where are you from?
I didn't know that.
Bangor.
Bangor. It's about an hour north of me.
Yes, I looked it up because I was like, my brother still lives there. He's lived there his whole life.
Wow.
Yeah. So I am an old maniac. I've been in Florida long enough that I kind of count as a Floridian, but I did have my roots in Maine. So I recognize that being down here, what they call lobster isn't actually lobster.
Oh, gosh. Not even close. Yeah. No, definitely not. Oh, my gosh. That's wild.
Yeah.
You never meet a fellow horse person that's from Maine.
And actually, from Maine. When I had Mary here for the clinic in February, we had a participant who comes to Florida from Maine.
Oh, my gosh. So, well, we do all exist. We do all leave in the winter, so you're more likely to meet a group of us in Florida.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So you have recently put out a book called Finding Herpes, and we want to hear all about it. We both have read it. It was just a wonderful read. So many times I said, yes, I resonate with this. Yes, I have felt these things. So, you know, tell us what inspired you to write a book?
It was always this little like bucket list thing kind of kicking around in my brain. Like someday I'd love to write a book, you know, and I just like kind of kept it there as a personal possible goal, but I never really told anyone about it. I was working with Caroline Culbertson at the time. She was helping me with like media and my website, and I was helping her with her horses. And I like floated it out to her, and she's like, "We have a lot to do. Maybe just, you know, pin that for later." And then about a year after that, Rebecca Didier, who was my editor, she worked for Trafalgar Square Books at that time, was at Equine Affair where I was, and I was teaching, and I just went over to say hi. We'd met each other through Tick, who had written books with Trafalgar, his first book with Trafalgar. And she, like, we were just having a casual conversation, and she just kind of said, "Hey, when you're ready to write your book, let me know." And I was like,
"Oh, wow."
And I was just like, you know, kind of dismissed it and was like, "That was weird. That was a weird conversation." And then later on, I was like, "Wait, did she really mean that?" So I messaged her and was like, "Rebecca, did you really mean that?" And then it just kind of sparked a conversation about what that might look like. And I had like a few little ideas in my mind about, you know, things I had already been talking about to people, like on podcasts and to clients and in my teaching out and about my own journey and like how that had evolved and how that really influenced the path I was on. And I thought to myself, I could expand on that. You know, I think I could really reflect on my life with horses and in retrospect, have a lot of insight about what shaped me as a horse person. And I think what shapes a lot of horse people, you know, like that I felt like I had a path that wasn't like super unique necessarily, but that has a lot of resonance, you know, and like similarities to other people's lives and past. And that hopefully my retrospects, like my insight looking back at that, is things that maybe other people could use or, you know, would find helpful.
I really appreciated how honest you were about the way that you felt and the mistakes that you made. Because so often we look at successful people and we think it's this straight, you know, trajectory from beginner to fabulous. And we don't, you know, it's like that cartoon of, you know, you see the person sitting on top of the iceberg, but you don't see everything underneath the water.
Yeah, totally.
And so many of us.
Hilarious. To think like of myself on top of an iceberg, because I feel like I'm still under the water. Like I do not think of myself in that way, you know. And like I think that's how a lot of professionals even feel, you know. So it's nice to share that, I think.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Do you know, it is a memoir with some training thoughts in it. Do you ever think, okay, I might want to write a second book and maybe have it more training oriented? Or does that, like, I have some natural horsemanship people that I follow. One of them has not written anything. He doesn't put stuff out on video because he feels like his training from 10 years ago is not the same as this training from now. It's, you know, constantly evolving. So how do you feel about maybe putting training out there in a book? Is that something you think you might want to do?
Yeah, that's a great question. I have definitely pondered it. And I think I look back at videos I've done, you know, and like, and I'm like, wow, I would do that so differently now. And that does freak me out a little bit. You know, I don't love that. Like, I don't love the idea that people will see that one snippet and be like, that's not for me, you know, because it just may have been a moment, you know, and it may be, I know my ideas have evolved so much since then. But I also hope that the people who are interested in the work, understand that people evolve, you know, like that there's room for that evolution. And that understanding, and that people wouldn't be dismissive of ideas, just because things do change, you know, like I actually, the people I admire most, and I think this is like a resonant theme in the book, is like, are people who never stop learning. They're mm-hmm. people who always are evolving and always, taking in new ideas and seeing where they fit in their theory. And then, you know, are willing to have conversations with people who have very different ideas than what they have, and, yeah. and see like what that does to them. Does it pull them in that direction at all? Or does it make them feel like even more resolute in what they already believe? And I think, by putting things down in writing, you know, you lock yourself in a little bit. Like I already look back at my own book, yeah. and I'm like, you know, I would have done this differently. Or that's just the nature of writing. Like it sets things sort of in stone, you know? Yes. But I do think the other reason for me it's hard to think about a book like that is because I think sometimes things are so nuanced in training that it's yeah. very hard to get that across in writing. Like every horse is so different. Every moment is so different. Every situation is so different that like you can do some broad strokes in writing that could really, really help people. But also if they run into something in the moment that they are like, well, this is what she said, but that's not what I see. Or like, now what? This wasn't even yeah. in the writing. Then like, I feel like I'm remiss in some way in helping them. Now, all that said, I have read some phenomenal training books. And there are yeah. some books that I'm like, wow, I love that idea. Even if the author's like, I've evolved since then. It's not what I would do now. There are things that I have read that I'm like, that makes a lot of sense to me. I think the way I tried, yeah, like you said, there are some training ideas in this book, but they're very like, they're theories. They're like mm-hmm. overarching ideas. They're not mm-hmm. like step-by-step processes. And I have really pondered doing a more process-oriented book. And I'm just not sure how to get it done well at this point. You know?
Yes, I understand. Because yeah. I dabble yeah. with the idea of writing one myself, mm-hmm. and I start, and then I go, but what if this, or what if that? Yeah. And it's totally. A very big.
But I think that's the nature of what we do. I mean, I don't post videos of myself writing on Facebook because what looked good to me today, in 2 months, I'm going to be appalled that I ever put that out.
Believe me.
You know what I mean?
Definitely.
So I think that, you know, making yourself vulnerable in yeah. writing, you know, talking about these are the ideas that I have. And I think you can give training ideas without giving specific step-by-step instructions. Right. You know, the concept of starting where the horse is rather than starting where the rider is. And what does that mean? And, yeah. you know, how to read what the horse is saying to you. I think those are the things, Chelsea, that you could do brilliantly.
Well, thank you.
I don't think that that's necessarily going to change so much over the years because those are basic tenets.
Yeah. I totally agree that there are some overarching tenets that feel really like they're going to be there no matter what. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that that's the same book that Stephanie is describing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think that those are almost two different books.
Yeah.
Well, and neither one is a bad idea. I have to just wrap my head around how either would happen, you know? And I think the other thing is like, so much has changed since the end of my first book. Like, honestly, that, like, I actually wish that I had put the book out a year later because I feel so different now than I did at the end of that book in terms of my own trajectory and career and beliefs and
Can you tell us about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So I think the book ended with me having just gotten Fox from Germany.
That's the red horse.
Mm-hmm, my big red guy. And then having taken Luna to the Mustang Classic.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my Mustang. And so after that, Fox and I went to Florida. And I had had him for like 6 months. We got to Florida. I had all these plans, but all the things we were going to do, we were staying at Tick and Sinead's farm, Copperline Farm. And it was just such a cool, like, it was lovely to be there and to run my business out of their farm and like have that feedback the whole winter. 3 days into being there, Fox came up lame out of the paddock with a sesamoid ligament injury, which is like a little ligament between their sesamoid bones. It took forever to figure it out, took so many diagnostics, and then he had to have almost a year off.
Oh.
And so that shook me so hard because it just like all of my plans just were like, you know, knocked sideways. And at the time, I was in the middle of a program with Natalie Hummel. I don't know if you know her, but she does mindset coaching for riders. And she, if your people don't know her, they should. She's amazing. And she's really based, her work is really based in nervous system regulation, which is like a big thing now. It's like a hot topic these days. But her background is in upper level eventing and in horses in general. So she's got this connection to the sport and in a way that she can really help people. Anyway, so I'm in the middle of a program with her and I'm like literally just melting down because my ego is telling me that like everything is wrong and bad and over. It became this huge reckoning for me in terms of like, I had to push the stop button, like not even pause. It was like hard stop.
Yeah.
What now? And I remember it being incredibly painful and incredibly difficult to like have to slow down enough to look at what I was doing and decide if it's what I actually wanted to be doing. And and I think what the short story of a long internal process is that I really wanted to figure out what fuels me in to work with horses. And like, if I took away all of the expectations for myself and the expectations I think other people have towards me, but they don't because people are generally more concerned about what they're doing than what other people are doing.
We're not that important to other people.
Yeah, exactly. And all of like the layers of habit and the layers of misunderstanding about community and what it would mean to change my trajectory and how that would affect my place in the community I've been part of for my entire life. When I like really stripped away all of those, oh my God, what's going to happen when? It turns out I didn't really want to be chasing the upper level eventing goals that I've had for so long. And that was like the most terrifying thing to say, because it's like what I had built my life around. It's like who I was, you know?
Right.
And didn't you also find it a little bit freeing to let go of that pressure?
After.
Okay.
I mean, first was the absolute abject terror.
Yeah.
Who are you then? If that's not who you are.
Right. Exactly. It was not lost on me that it was the same evolution that had happened to me in the book that I just written. when I was like, I need to go meditate for several years. And and there was part of me that's also like, why is this happening to me again? You know, like I thought I had done this work. But, you know, whenever things like that come back around, you know, there's another level of work to be done. And it was, again, like so much scarier for me internally than anybody would know. And that's just because my own misunderstandings about what it means to be good enough, to be enough and to be part of a community and to be accepted. And so, yes, on the other side of all of that abject terror was so much freedom, like an incredible amount of freedom. And
yay,
I more often than not now live in that sense of freedom. And, and every once in a while I have these moments of like, wait, what am I doing? Shoot, should I have done a different thing? You know?
Yeah.
So turns out what I really, really enjoy doing is understanding horses deeply, like really getting to see them as individuals with information that they have to share with us, and connecting them with them on like a level of understanding that allows for things like liberty work, performance work, bridleless riding, you know, putting on sparkly clothes and running around in an indoor arena with my giant horse doing fancy tricks. Like, that's so fun to me, to music. Yeah. Like, it's so fun.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that was kind of what came out on the other side of that. And then while my horse was on layoff and I was figuring out how to navigate that for both him and I, that was, it's hard. Like, you all know, when you have a horse that is used to having a job and moving and like, to see them not be able to do a lot of that, it took some real lateral thinking for me to take care of him and myself in a way that was going to be okay for the next 9 to 10 months. Mm-hmm. And I will say we came out on the other side of that with like so much better relationship because of the way I chose to do it. It wasn't like drug the horse, put him in a stall. It was like every single day we still have things we do together. And we did some of the weirdest stuff, like Fox can pick out a blue cone and a red cone and a yellow cone on command. Wow. And he can push a ball three different ways. And he you know, do everything you would ever ask him to do laterally over anything you could put under his body.
Wow.
So all these fun, silly things that we did, but they really were relationship changers. And they led to him being such a cool partner for me.
Yeah.
And while that was all happening, I was like, this is a lot. I would like to progress in my own goals, albeit different ones now, and enjoy that. Like, really feel like there's some ease to that. So I went with my friend Tick to Road to the Horse, where he was competing for the second time in a colt starting competition.
That was amazing.
And he had won the previous year, and I invited him back. And then he picked this little buckskin quarter horse for his partner. And I watched that horse for 3 days and I was like, man, I just really like this horse. And I talked to Tick and his pen wrangler, Nick, about him. And I was like, I kind of want to take that horse home. And so at the end of that competition that Tick won again,
I
bought him. Yep. Yeah. I took him home. And he is like the coolest guy. Like, it is such a fun breath of fresh air to have my giant warm blood, who, you know, he's amazing.
He's amazing.
He's also who he is. And then my quarter horse over here, who is also amazing, but like so chill and just so simple. And so I'm so like ready to just do stuff.
It's almost as if you've put the joy back into your career.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. And it's something that I've been talking about doing for a long, long time and had been moving towards in small ways, but that hard stop was like, now you need to figure this out. You got to figure it out. So,
thinking about the work that you did on the ground with Fox while you couldn't be in the saddle, you're back in the saddle with him now, right?
Yeah.
Did you feel a difference either physically, like in the availability of his body or like the availability of his brain for you? Totally. From what you've done?
150%. Like so much. I can't even, like, he couldn't move. Like, he didn't do more than walk for almost 9 months. But we did so much that by the time we could start walking and trotting and cantering, I could just take him off the line and just like do liberty work with him. He was just like, okay, so he's ready to go. And like, of course, there are always like layers and depth to, like, as you add energy and you add environmental changes, like, of course it wasn't perfect all the time and it's still an evolution in process, but like the difference in his awareness of his own body was, it just went through the roof. And then his awareness of his relationship to my body also changed completely. And so, like, I mean, it's so lovely when you can go out to your field and from a mile away, your horse is like, oh, hi. And they're like nickering and they come to the gate and they want to work yep. with you and they want to do stuff. Yep. And like, I know that was not the way it was for me when I was really, you know, like in my early 20s and early 30s. And I know that's not the way it is for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And like to know that that's just the way it is for all the horses here at my farm and my horses and, you know, horses that come into training. Like it's such a gift to have those kind of relationships.
I don't think that it's made important enough. I don't think people make it important enough.
No, they don't.
You know, you go in the stall and you grab the horse.
Yeah.
What if your horse came to you? Just mm-hmm. like you're saying, yeah. like that's
yeah.
It's more than riding. It's just more than riding. Oh, you know, Lord. these people who, I mean, even something as basic as when I had boarders and the horses would come and they didn't lead. And I would say mm-hmm. to the rider, how do you expect your horse to follow you under saddle if he doesn't follow you on the lead line? Totally. You know, there's just totally. So much more to the relationship that you totally. Can have. My very first horse colicked right after I got him and had to have surgery, and I couldn't ride him for months. Mm-hmm. And we spent a lot of time playing together. And at the yeah. end of that time, I had a much different relationship with him
totally.
And it translated under saddle. And
it
I don't
really
think
does.
People recognize that. They mm-hmm. think it's two entirely no. different things and they don't want to spend the time. They just want to ride.
Totally. Totally. And I think I've thought a lot about the different phases of my relationship to horses. Mm-hmm. And like when I was a child, it was like magical, right? It's like mm-hmm. this like amazing thing that you get to do, but you're like a little bit like the passenger just getting to ride this amazing yeah. creature, right? And then if you become a professional, it often becomes utilitarian. It's mm-hmm. very like these animals are here so that I can XYZ. It yes. might be make a living. It might be make a name for yourself. It might be get to a certain level. It might, you know, whatever right. that is. And it becomes very utilitarian. And I think a lot of people just stay there. They just stay yeah. in the utilitarian zone. And that's not to say like better or worse. I'm not pointing that finger. It's like, right. It's a choice of like what feels like an in integrity to you. And what feels in integrity to me is to be more aware of horses as individual beings and like connect with them on like a different level. Mm-hmm. And that's not even meant to be like woo-woo. It's not. Like it's just literally listening to them. You're literally yeah. doing like watching yeah. them and understanding their language and like understanding how to clearly communicate with them. It's like yeah. any like it's like working with dogs, you know what I mean? It's like mm-hmm. You learn a language that works between you and your animal. Mm-hmm. And we can do the same thing with horses. But mm-hmm. I think a lot of people never shift out of that utilitarian view of them to get something from them. And I definitely have realized more and more and more like horses owe me nothing. They owe me absolutely right. nothing.
But you have to be pretty willing to be humbled.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes I know when I was first, when the natural horsemanship side of being a horse person first got introduced to me in a way that I could grasp it. Not just like, okay, it's, you know, doing these six things and getting your horse to do those six things and you're good.
Totally.
I was so overwhelmed with it as a concept that I became totally. A bit of an apologist with my horses.
Yeah.
And then I was like too much like, oh, that's not okay for you.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. then I became a terrible leader for my horses.
Huh? I happened to have a horse that's a whole that lot of people fall into.
Super yep. strong leadership.
Yeah.
I called him my feral FBI horse because if you brought him the wrong halter, you wouldn't catch him for 2 weeks.
Wow. Yeah.
But I could still train him. You know, I'd still train him to be a Pre St. George horse. But uh-huh. when we had a pretty major wreck,
mm-hmm.
it made me, nobody else wanted to get on him. Mm-hmm. And it made me go, we have to go back to the basic and strip yeah. off all of this artifice that I had put on. And then yep. once I got back in the saddle with him, it was, I mean, even on the ground, we went through some pretty hard times, but it was because my leadership had been so milquetoast.
Yeah.
And once I gave him that, he was like,
yeah,
okay, I trust you implicitly.
Yeah. And that's exactly what I'm saying about, it's not woo woo. It's not like, I'm going to be my horse's best friend. It's like literally understanding them. They're not looking for you to coddle them. That's not how horses work. They're looking for information and safety because they're flight and prey animals. They just want to know they're going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And so like, it's not about like, hugs and snuggles and making everything feel easy all the time. That's not what it's about. It's about like reading them and like knowing how you can get your information to them so that they feel safe and they feel like clearly communicated with. Like you go to a new country where you don't know the language, you don't want people to like baby you. You want them to teach you. You want them to show you. You want to learn so you can understand better and not feel like lost. And I think so many horses just feel lost and like they're just like, they just gotta put their head down and do, you know? And like, I just don't want that for them. I just want them to feel understood.
I think that's why sometimes like you can see somebody that you think, oh, they're a mean rider, but the horse is doing it because at least there is a level of clarity of expectation in that person. They could be kinder. They could be more thoughtful, but at least they're clear. And the horse is like, if I do this, I'm going to be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Clarity is absolutely key. And I think we can learn better and better ways to be clear by learning how to break things down into smaller and smaller and smaller steps.
Yep.
Yeah. And that, I think people just don't necessarily always want to do that because it takes more time.
It's hard.
It's always worth the time.
This is all hard.
It's so hard.
Yeah. And, you know, people want to do it. People want easy, you know, I mean, I understand that because I'd like it to be easy. And when I first started riding dressage, I thought I would never be good enough. So I thought I could skip steps because I didn't need to be, you know, Reiner Klimke Klaus Balkenhol. Yeah. And I would never have, you know, harmony and self carriage and softness and all of that because, you know, I wouldn't. And as I've gotten more educated, I've realized that you can have all of that and still not be Reiner Klimke or Klaus Balkenhol. And that, you know, the relationship that you develop with the horse, helps you improve ultimately faster.
Totally.
Then, you know, I say a lot, you know, I would rather that my horse want to work for me than that my horse feels he has to work for me.
Absolutely. And you know, what I think is really interesting is that when you back out far enough to examine what you're doing with your horse and why, and then decide that you hope, you know, you might want to do it a little differently, is that you have to do the kind of personal work that also affects your relationships with your spouse, with your friends, with your coworkers, with other people in your barn, with your other pets, with the world at large. And like the people I know, including myself, who are willing to do that work, their entire lives change, not just their life, but their horse. Like their entire lives improve.
Yeah.
And it's not easy. It is way more calorically challenging and like takes a lot more from you than it does to be habitual. But it is 100% worth the effort and the change.
Sort of related to that, you are so this isn't the right word, but you're so willing to expose yourself. You're so willing to be vulnerable about who you are and the journeys that you've been through. How does it feel to have your life out there so publicly? And how have people, you know, you said you do the work and then your relationships are different. How are they different and are they better? Are you losing people? Are you gaining people?
That's a great question. That's a great question.
We need to know.
Do you have
Yeah.
Do I have what?
have creepers, people that creep around.
Oh my gosh.
You know? Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I do. Not that I'm aware of. I think like the people, like the reason why I admired Tick's work so much when I first met him is because of that vulnerability, mm-hmm. because of that humanity, because of that willingness to be like, I'm doing the best I can. And it's mm-hmm. not perfect. And it's not social media ready. You yeah. know, it's just it's what I'm doing. And I hope that that helps other people like feel less alone and feel like they're not unique in their struggle. Like that's not meant to be mean, like it, as in everybody's struggle is real, but it's also universal. Like, yeah, we all right. have these struggles.
Right.
And knowing that, like, you can't heal anything in a vacuum. That's not how healing works. You always right. have to have co-regulation and information from other people who've had similar experiences. That's just literally how change happens. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like by putting that out there, I will say I have not read my entire book word for word. And if I go back and do that, I'd be like, oh my God. but I also think like no one has said, oh, that was crazy. Maybe they're thinking it, but yeah. then they're not my people. You right. know what I mean?
Yes.
That's right. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. And I would say I've connected with more people because of it than have lost people. And I think like relationships always go through evolutions, and like sometimes you're connected to people for a long time and then like things change and people grow in different ways, and then that connection mm-hmm. dissolves, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like the more authentic I am, the more I am operating out of my own integrity, the more the people around me reflect that. And that's who I want to be around.
Mm-hmm. When I remember when I finished reading your book, I felt a sense of joy to know that there were other like-minded horse people
yeah.
out there.
That's what I want.
I was not mm-hmm. the only one. And I'm like, okay, this is going to be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. That makes me yeah. so happy to hear. Thank you for saying
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was awesome. So we're glad that you don't have any obvious creepers. That's a good thing.
Yeah. If I have creepers, I hope they're in like a good way. Like
yeah.
they want to come talk to me, but they're nervous. And they always can.
Yeah. But I think that the book makes it obvious that you are approachable.
That's great.
You know, I know when and I looked it up, it was in 2021 that Stephanie and I talked to you.
Yeah,
2021.
Since that.
A lot has happened. And I know yeah. that, you know, Steph was the one who set it up for us to talk to you. And she sent me your website and I read through it and I was like, this woman sounds a little bit out there. You know, and I was
your honesty.
I'm being honest, you know, and I thought, well, you know, I'm going into it open-minded because I mean, I used to carry healing crystals. Okay. I can do woo-woo.
How could you know? I found that there was nothing about crystals on my website.
Oh, I know. But I thought, you know, okay, I'm going to go in open. I'm not going to go in and say, I'm, this is just too off the yeah. wall for me. This is too different from dressage for me.
Okay.
And
that's fair.
I loved you. I love it. It's one of my favorite interviews that we have ever done. And you know how you said you haven't read your book. I don't listen to the podcast because I can't stand listening to myself. I've listened to that interview more than once. And part of it was such a different way of approaching what I do and how I do it. And not only with the horses, but with the people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really appreciate that. And I found from talking to you then and from reading the book as well, that if I ran into you at a horse show, I felt like I could walk up to you and assuming I was a stranger and say, hi, my name is, yeah. I just want to tell you how much learning about you is meant to me. And do you mind if I ask you a question? You know, and yeah. then you would be willing to answer that
100%.
Question.
100%.
And, you know, not all of the biggies are approachable.
I don't consider myself a biggie, but thank you.
But you are, you know, but you are.
Small.
Yeah, you know? Thank you. It's really
so
kind.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and again, it's sort of how we define success. And I think
absolutely.
It's wonderful that you have been able to redefine your sense of success. Yeah. And to find joy again, because we've talked a lot about this on the podcast, Stephanie and I, that, you know, my life has changed really dramatically in the way that I have my goals. And I had to acknowledge that I was never going to meet my goals. Mm-hmm. And that was okay, because what I was doing was not only enough, but was success.
Yeah.
And it's so freeing. And I'm glad that you were able to find that and to stop pressuring yourself to be that perfect person.
Totally. And I think goals change, right? Like, I think that's one of the things that is really hard for people. Like, the goals I had when I was 12 were different than the goals I have when I was 20. And they ought to be different than the goals
they should.
I have now. Like, if they're not, I wonder what we're clinging on to, you know, like what story are we telling ourselves, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that there's, like, those stories are so normal and human, and we come by them completely honestly out of our childhood and our lives and, like, the things that we assign meaning to as a young person. And, like, the evolution there is healthy and normal.
Yeah.
You know,
we go from Ricky Bobby, if you ain't first, you're last, to a higher elevation.
Right.
You know, another thing that I think is interesting about you, Chelsea, and maybe you can talk a little bit about this, is that a lot of trainers, you ride with the trainer and that's it. And if you want to go take a clinic with somebody else, it's like, no. Or they have to be pre-approved. And yet looking at your website, you are bringing in so many varied, you know, walks of life. And, and, you know, how does that impact the people at your barn and your students and your training?
That's a great question. So, I love that question. So there was a time in my career when I would have clung on to students and said, don't do that. And that is ego. Like, that is sheerly out of that fear of losing that person, or that fear of being seen as wrong, or that fear of, and I should say, like, that still kicks up for me sometimes. That I'm not immune to that, because that's really human, you know?
The worry of,
but I would say that, like, my curiosity outweighs the fear. And that has, like, that's really important to me, is that, like, I always want to be learning. I do get either recommendations from people I really trust about the people that I bring in, or I see them teach before, or I work with them, like, in another setting before I bring them to the farm. So it's not like I'm, you know, hoping that it'll all work out. Like, I do enough research, I feel pretty comfortable with it. And then, you know, it started for me, as Stephanie knows, way up here in Maine, you don't necessarily have access to the kind of help that you want. And this is where I am. This is where my husband was born and raised. And it was really important to him to be here. This is where our kids are. They go to school here. We have family here. And so I needed to figure out a way to also help myself. And so it really started as a, like, selfish adventure of, like, who can I bring to help me, because I need resources. And then it's really grown into, I see it personally as a way to keep connecting these, what people think of as disparate threads and niches in the horse community, into to show people that they are all connected, like, really clearly. And I just love it when I get, like, dressage riders who come and they do a Liberty clinic, or I get event riders and they're coming and doing, like, a horse, you know, groundwork and horsemanship, or they come and do a straight dressage clinic. Like, I just love it. I think it pulls us out of those cliques, you know, and it just shows us what is the unifying thing, which is our love of this animal and our love of the connection we have to them. So, it's been, like, an interesting growth trajectory of that aspect of my business and that aspect of my farm. And I'm really enjoying it. Who knows if it'll stay forever, you know, but, like, right now it's where we're at.
For now. Yeah. Very cool.
And I do hope that it brings awareness to my farm and my work as well. Like, that's part of the interaction.
Of course.
Hopefully they see my work and my students who are involved in the clinics, and they go, huh, that looks different and interesting, and I want some of that.
Yeah. And they get to see your fabulous round barn.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you had one thing, if you want to call it a piece of advice or a thought or just like a heartfelt emotion that you would like to pass on to our listeners, what would that one piece of information be?
That's a mean.
I know.
That's a mean question.
I would say figure out how to align with what's in integrity for you. Like, you got to figure that out. Like, there's a lot of paths to that understanding, and not one is right for everyone, but you've got to figure that out so that you can then decide from that place what you want to be doing with horses.
Great.
That's a personal path, you know, but like, everybody don't just keep doing things because it's what you've always done. Like, amen, notice that when it doesn't feel right or when it doesn't feel in alignment, and then figure out how to shift for your sake and for your horse's sake.
Isn't she wonderful, Steph?
Yes.
Yeah. So I told you.
Yesterday I told you. My birthday, and you're like adding a second birthday to it. So great.
This is just awesome.
Yeah,
I feel all bubbly inside. Like,
well, you got to come back to Bangor to visit your family, and then come up and visit the farm.
That would be fun. That would be fun. And eat lobster every single day until the point that I'm like, I don't need any lobster.
Never want that again.
Oh, Chelsea, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate this time.
And it's great to talk to you again.
I love it.
Meeting you in person, whether it's up in Maine or in Florida when you're here next season.
Yeah, I'm really excited to be back in the warm weather next winter.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, it is 94 degrees in Maryland today with like 80% humidity. So you might as well come to Maryland because it's Florida.
That's a lot.
It's brutal today.
I look forward to summer here. And
yes.
There. Let's put it that way.
Exactly.
Thanks for listening to this special episode of the Dressage Today podcast. And a big thank you to the episode's sponsor, Tribute. You can subscribe to the Dressage Today podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. While you're there, please rate and review the show. Thanks again for joining us. I'm Alana Harrison, and you've been listening to the Dressage Today podcast.